This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey folks, and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's 12:05 on this Monday, the 14th of June. I'm Rich Bradbury, and I'm in the studio with...
Arvini Braj.
We're going to be with you for about an hour or so this afternoon before we head over to podcast. So stick with us for the next hour or so. A little bit of the blind leading the blind, perhaps, today, Arv. My contacts have been ruined this morning. Mm-hmm. I really can't see what the heck that I'm doing, so you might have to... You know, help me out a little bit today.
It should be fun.
Mm-hmm. I can't see screens. Everything's a little bit blurry. I'm getting old, you see. And I'm saying that before anybody else here in the studio says that. Of course, Christine is not with us today, so I won't be having that coming at me, you know.
Age gap.
Yes. Thanks, Alf. So here's what we're talking about today.
So we're going to talk about how an expert or the expert is suggesting micro steps when shifting gears in life.
And then we will be looking at our second story, and our second story is all about how Malaysia are working on two vaccines for COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Then we're going to talk about a vaccine cocktail because some countries are starting to use two different vaccines as the first and second dose.
All right. Let's start off with that first story then. If you want to get in touch, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, on Twitter or Instagram. As usual, it's at BFM Radio. Arv, take it away.
Yeah, so many countries are finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to COVID. Not locally as of yet, and there's some sense of anticipation in everyone's minds. There are places starting to open up. The demand for airline tickets are surging. People are able to go out and see their friends again. They're also preparing to go back to the office to work full time. Mm. Here in Malaysia, of course, we experienced something like that at the end of every major MCO. So at the end of every proper lockdown, we see some loosening of the rules and regulations. We're able to go out more. And then we had that sense of anticipation at the end of 2020 when things seemed to go back to normal, almost.
Yeah.
And then our numbers started to spike and started surging again. According to experts, the important thing to remember is that things are never going back to the old ways again. And they say that that's actually a good thing. So we've spent more than a year looking inward, thinking about what we want to take with us and what we want to leave behind, the useful and the useless. And if we're going to make the most of this moment, we need to accompany our big plans with small steps. So according to Arianna Huffington via Fast Company, this part of going back to normal life, quote unquote, isn't an old chapter, but it's actually a new uncertain chapter. Mm. And we have to this once in a generation opportunity to apply these lessons of our individual and collective experience to the life that we're going to have. And this, she says, will be the small steps, more than the big steps, that help us navigate the transition. And these are called micro steps. Micro steps, according to her, are these small science-backed steps that we can start taking immediately to build healthy habits that significantly improve our lives. So it's kind of like a behavior change system used by individuals and organizations to help build resilience, strengthen their connections, and improve performance. Also, micro steps are too small to fail, she says, which is very, very important because we've had a sense of failing a lot over the last year. Yeah. It's kind of like languishing. We're unable to focus. We're unproductive, caught in this, like, quote-unquote, void between depression and flourishing. That's according to Adam Grant. Micro steps give us quick bursts of action, which is going to be vital if we want to approach the stage of shifting gears from pandemic to post-pandemic. So we're not at that stage yet locally. Again, we're still, you know, we're still in the middle of the FMCO. Our numbers are still quite demotivating, but we will get there in time, and then we'll have to shift gears and figure out how to go to a post-pandemic way of life. And what she says is they give us something to celebrate, these micro steps, moving us forward to our next small win, and then the next one, and then the next one again and again. And over time, as we build new habits, they become more than what we do. They become part of who we are. So with minimal time and effort, you can integrate micro steps into your days with immediate benefits for your well-being and your resilience, your focus, your relationships, a sense of purpose. And there's nothing wrong with aiming big, she says, but we can help ourselves by starting small. She also breaks it up into like very simple steps to follow. So she says, Arianna Huffington says that a few of her favorite micro steps is just to get people started. She says, when you wake up, don't start by looking at your phone. Instead, take at least 1 minute to relax or just breathe and set your intentions for the day.
I'd love to do that, except my cat insists that I feed him. Uh-huh. But that stops me from looking at my phone.
Still not your phone. Yeah. An easy way to add some gratitude to our lives is through what researchers call habit stacking, where you attach a new habit to an existing one. So every time you brush your teeth, simply think of three things that you are happy about. Make it automatic. So every time you're doing something that you would normally do in a day, a routine thing, that becomes a sort of trigger or key for you to think of something that makes you happy. Then she goes on to neuroscience that shows that we can course correct from stress in as little as 60 to 90 seconds. And we can do this by focusing on our breath, which activates our parasympathetic nervous system, lowering our levels of stress, the stress hormone cortisol. She says that the Navy SEALs use a stress reduction method called box breathing. All you have to do is inhale to a count of four, then hold to a count of four, and then exhale to a count of four. And finally, she says, pick a time at night when you turn off your devices and remove them from your bedroom. Our phones are the access points to everything that we need to put away to allow us to sleep. Our to-do lists on the phone, the inboxes on the phone, multiple projects, problems, and especially the news cycle is through the phone. And disconnecting from the digital world will help us sleep better and deeply recharge, which I feel all these things are like fairly simple to follow.
And they're not new. These are things that we've discussed pre-pandemic as well.
Yeah.
To help with mental health and anxiety and a whole bunch of other stuff. Have you followed any of these things even before Arianna Huffington has come out and said, hey, these are the things you need to be doing?
Yeah, the micro steps.
Right. Have you been doing any of these things at all?
The first one, yes. I found that I have the habit of looking at my phone the moment I wake up because that's where my alarm is.
Same.
So the alarm rings, I put it off, and then you see your notifications. There's something on Instagram or there's something in the WhatsApp messages. And that's what I do like immediately. Mm. 15 minutes after I wake up, I'm like scrolling on my phone. Which I've like actively had to stop myself from doing. Also, I've stopped myself from using the phone before I sleep because I feel like I think it's 5 minutes, but what I'm doing is I'm on the phone for at least 45 minutes on TikTok or whatever other social media platform. Mm. So those two things.
That's my big habit, and I get told off about it all the time. Mm. And I think it goes back to that revenge nighttime procrastination thing that we've done before, where sometimes you don't feel as though you have, for those of you that don't know about it, it feels like you don't have the time to yourself throughout the day, and the only time that you have to yourself is that period at night before you go to sleep, to kind of focus on the stuff that you want to focus on. But I'm really bad at that. And let's say, for example, I go to bed at 10 o'clock. I'm like you. I'll be scrolling until 11:15 sometimes even 12 o'clock. And it's mainly going through news websites, catching up on what's happened throughout the day on social media, because I'm trying, in my head, I'm trying to avoid it throughout the day. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then I'm looking at it at night, which is not helping me sleep. And of course, when I wake up in the morning and my phone is there and the alarm is on my phone, it's back into that cycle again. But I'm like you, in the morning, I'm actively leaving my phone away and not looking at it. I have this habit of going downstairs, preparing a cup of coffee, feeding the cats, watering the plants, and then I can look at my phone. That's like 20, 25 minutes. So it's not quite the same, but there's still that. Yeah, it feels like I have to break these little things.
But it's a good enough buffer, no?
Yeah, but that in and of itself is still another habit that I'm creating, right?
And what they say is when it comes to, you can sort of like reverse that by habit stacking. That's what it's called, habit stacking. Mm. So instead of doing the phone thing, you think of, you sort of think of something else when you're doing one of your routine things like brushing your teeth, which is pretty interesting, I feel, because it says that neuroscience shows that's how you rewire your brain. I don't know, like honestly, I'm going to speak like personally, I don't follow a lot of these things a lot. I don't know how much they work and stuff, but it sounds interesting.
All right, let's take a break while folks at home think about that. Of course, if you want to get in touch via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, Twitter or Instagram, we're at BFM Radio. We're going to be hearing from an expert after the break. Who are we hearing from, Arv?
We have Dr. Anasuya Jagadevi Jagadesan on the line with us, and she'll be joining us after the break.
That's it then. We're going to have a short break with some music. This is Tame Impala with Elephant here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Better Finance Management. BFM 89.9.
into part two of Enterprise Biz Bytes on Monday, the 14th of June, with me, Rich Bradbury, and
Arvind Braj.
And with vaccination rollouts bringing tremendous success and a sense of normalcy in many countries, people are starting to gear up for a pre-pandemic way of life. For some, this isn't as easy as it sounds. Going back to work after more than a year of being at home can be difficult. So it's important to pace yourself or risk being overwhelmed. Me and Arvind were kind of looking at how some of the other countries were doing this morning and having a bit of a discussion about that, being jealous of some of our friends over in the States and in the UK and other places who, to some degree, seem to be going back to normalcy.
Yeah.
And they're not just taking micro steps. Some of them are taking great big leaps.
Massive major steps,
yeah. Seeing concerts happening and all kinds of stuff happening. Did you hear about the Foo Fighters who have talked about putting on a large concert as well?
No.
They've said they're going to be doing one over in the US, but one of the prerequisites to going to the concert is that they're still considering this, is that you have to be vaccinated before you attend the concert. Of course, that's created some controversy over in the US, but it is what it is, right?
But knowing the Foo Fighters,
I think they're going to do it. It's just going to be like, we're going to do it anyway. If you don't want to come, don't come.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have our opinion of some of these things that Arvind has been talking about, these micro steps. We've kind of discussed them previously in other shows in a different way. Arianna Huffington is telling us that, you know, we should get out of bed and not pick up our phone and do some other bits and pieces first.
Makes sense.
But you managed to get hold of an expert to talk to us about this.
Yeah, so on the line with us now is Associate Professor Dr. Anasuya Jagadevi Jagadesan. She's the Director for the Center of Human Development and Excellence at Taylor's University. Dr. Anasuya, so what are your initial thoughts on the article, this idea of taking micro steps when gearing up for regular life again?
Now, for some people, taking micro steps, it's a good way to start. For some people, you need to take micro steps. If you found that life is too hard, that when you want to change, it is a struggle. So you need to do micro steps. And if you are that, if you are the kind of person who finds it very hard to start and you need small starts, then by all means, micro step is maybe the right thing for you. For other people, it is all or nothing. For some people, it can be like, if I take a micro step, I will feel like I've not done anything. And so then, you know, it's actually more depressing for some people to do micro steps. So they need to do like everything, or they need to do a lot so they can see immediate change. So when you're talking about all these types of articles, which is telling people, oh, you know, this is how you can improve your life, this is what you can do, we must always remember that the information is good for some people, but for other people, depending on your personality, depending on your likes, depending on your who you are, you have to go about your own way. Always take these articles as interesting guides and interesting information, but how you apply that information in your life has to suit you as a human being and has to suit your family dynamic and how that would work within your family. So if we remember that when we look at all these, you know, the influencers, the guides, what are we supposed to do? You choose what suits you the best. And yes, micro steps for some people may be the best thing to do, especially if you are overwhelmed or you feel that, you know, you're coming out of a panic and you need some support. It may be a good way to get some support.
So we seem to experience this every few months when the restrictions start to ease. How is it different? And do micro steps actually work then?
The problem with all the restrictions which keep going and coming back is, especially in Malaysia here, you know, we have a sense of, you know, the restrictions, the timing is bad. Why is this not being done in a more logical manner? You know, there are a lot of complaints from people. I mean, and okay, given we don't know all the details, but as human beings, we like to complain and we like to state our point of view. It is frustrating. Do what you need to do in order to make your life livable. And, you know, I mean, I will just speak for myself when I say this. My frustration levels at MCO again and again and again is really high because there's a lot of things that is happening and there's a lot of restrictions in life. And, you know, it's not stopping things like we have to pay rent, we have to find a new place to live, we have to, you know, some people have to find new jobs, some people have to, you know, some people have to restructure their whole lives. And when we are doing this and then right in the middle of that you have MCO, it's like, what are we supposed to do? I mean, you know, it is so hard just to live And I think that, I mean, micro steps, I don't know. I genuinely don't know, because I am going to say that when you're, it's like you're, we are being inundated by so many things when it comes to MCO, and then doing one small thing, does it give you that satisfaction? Now, if you are the kind of person that can take satisfaction from it, well and good. But some of us need something a bit bigger. We need a bigger kind of celebration. We need something more active. And, you know, so again, it goes back to the kind of person you are. But I do want to say that MCO is overwhelming, and the amount of problems it causes on an individual level and family level can be overwhelming, because especially when, you know, life has not been easy and there are big changes that have to happen because of MCO. So, you know, and then right when you're trying to settle those changes, more problems happen. So I don't want to, you know, demean, and I don't want to look down. I don't want to minimize the impact of MCO by saying that some kinds of micro steps will help. I mean, it may help on a personal level. It may help a little bit. Yeah, sure. And anything that helps a little bit is good. But we need a little bit more proactive kind of, you know, inoculations. We need the numbers to go down. We need the MCO to go away.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So on that note, what are some of the downsides of having to implement these micro steps over and over and over again each time a new MCO is implemented?
The problem with the MCO, I think I've mentioned this earlier, that, you know, it is not that life has to stop. And government, you know, everybody seems to act as if life is stopping, but you see, life continues. You still have to pay rent. You still have to pay your dues. You still have to pay, you know, for loans. And where is the money coming from, especially if you are in a job which is a daily paid job, if you're in a job that is, that has been closed because it's considered, you know, a specialty job or not an important job? That means what? Where are you getting food from? Where are these people getting their livelihood from in this point in time? So, I mean, again, when we're looking at MCO, we have to look at a bigger picture of the impact that it's been having. And, I mean, to be fair to the government, that's why the government didn't want to implement the MCO a bit earlier, or was trying to be a bit careful about running the MCO. So then it comes down, when the MCO is not being implemented, so, you know, when it goes to RMCO and CMCO, for God's sakes, be careful. You know, stop the parties. The biggest problem is when people are, you know, it's the private events that are creating the problems more than anything else. You know, so come on, you know, just, we all have to work together on this one, because it has to go away. Okay, it really does have to. It's so depressing. Okay, I'm being depressed right now. So,
okay. So, what are some other things people can do to prepare themselves mentally when returning to work or some kind of normalcy, I guess?
Okay, what are some of the things people can do to prepare themselves mentally? I think people are very prepared to return to normalcy. People want to return to normalcy. People are dying for it. There's not much that we have to prepare to do. We just want to get back to normal. I find this, okay, maybe I'm speaking for myself again, because I just, you know, I'm way over preparing. I'm way prepared to get back to normal. I don't know. And I genuinely don't know how many other people need to prepare to be normal. The preparation to be stuck at home, the preparation to not be able to do things, that is actually a lot harder. In personal point of view, again, I'm not going to speak for everybody else, but I'm frustrated enough with the situation to say that I'm just waiting for it, and I cannot imagine, yeah, that's it.
Okay, last question, Dr. Anasuya. So how can employers apply these or other steps when welcoming back employees who have been working from home over the last year?
Now, the more interesting question is, how do companies then restructure when you're having people come back to work after, you know, work from home? So now we've had 1 year of people working from home, and now you've got companies which are, you know, want people back in the office. So the question is, and I think this is a question that we are going to have to ask moving forward and moving into the future, is, do we need so many people to do overtime in the office? Can the offices, now that we've seen how this works, you know, where they are, there is some benefit to take home and, you know, finish up at home and you don't have to spend overtime in the office. Is there, you know, is there more leniency that can be given to people? Is flexible working hours more of a thing? I mean, I know in Europe, at in one point, they were the best companies were doing four-day work weeks. So whether we can actually look at implementing four-day work weeks, look at outcomes of the job rather than looking at heads in the office. But that would require a more forward view from employers. It would require employers to let go of some of the physical control and just focus on the control of product quality of what is being produced by the employees at the end of the day. Now, there are still many employers out there who are stuck with this idea that, oh, I must see them in my office because I'm paying them. You know, but MCO may have taught all of us one thing. You're not paying your staff to physically sit in your office. You're paying your staff to get a certain amount of tasks done within a certain frame of time. So, you know, really the question now is going to be, can that level of flexibility be taken into the workplace to find a nice balance where, you know, we really do have work-life balance? And this is something I'm actually quite interested in looking at and quite interested in helping people build, is this idea of, with the MCO, when you're looking at companies, can companies now find a way when we get staff back in the office to have a healthier work-life balance where companies maybe can save in terms of space, in terms of, you know, physical location, smaller locations, and at the same time ensure that their staff are not doing too much at home, but doing a reasonable amount of work at home where they are comfortable as well. So it can be a win-win situation for everybody, because one thing, travel cost has been ridiculous, and cutting off travel cost may be a really good way on both sides that creates a win-win situation where, you know, staff and employees don't have to waste time on travel. So there are a few things that we can learn from MCO, from this whole 1 year. We can learn, especially in terms of efficiency and effectiveness of job space and work-life balance. I mean, one thing has been clear, it's that working all the way from home does not really work. Home life does infringe on work life, and we need some level of separation between the two. But at the same time, not all duties require you to be in the office physically in order to carry them out. So striking a nice balance to move forward between the two for corporations and for individuals may be a really good way to reduce costs, may be a really good way to make, you know, people more efficient, people more effective, to make people happier all around. So, I mean, I find that this question is a really interesting question, and I do hope that many companies out there take this seriously to address, you know, not only for yourself, but your whole company. How can this balance now be struck in order to achieve efficiency? How many hours do people actually have to be in the office versus what can be done at home?
That was Associate Professor Dr. Anasuya Jagadevi Jagadesan, Director for the Center of Human Development and Excellence at Taylor's University.
And what did you think about that?
Lots of interesting points. Also, especially her last point where, you know, people, workplaces are going to have to think about how they want to implement this long term. Because like even like the article says, we're never going back to the old ways. Mm. And I think a lot of people are going to want some sort of like a hybrid work model instead of just going back to what they were doing before the pandemic.
Really interesting points that she raised. A couple of things that I want to very quickly touch on. Mm. The idea of happiness and that balance when you're working from home and working from the office. And not just that, but more about the idea where we're already stressed enough as it is because of the pandemic. And then you have this backwards and forwards of the MCO and what's open and what's not. Yep. And, you know, the MITI letters and the Russian roulette for getting a vaccination, mm-hmm. all of these things already adding to a stressed nation, you know, which creates real, real problems, you know, and that in turn adds on to stuff like I have to travel to work, mm-hmm. you know, which is a real, real issue. And like she said, you can make some real savings by not having to go to work on a daily. But I have benefited greatly from not having to come to work every day mm-hmm. because I am seeing my travel expenses being reduced massively.
Yeah.
You know, my bank balance is thanking me for that, you know, and as I'm thanking myself.
And that eases your mind.
And that eases my mind. Yeah. So there has to be some kind of thing, because now we've seen the other side of things.
Yeah.
You know, there is no
way.
We
know better.
As she said, there's no way we can go back to how things were before. They would just be absolute chaos.
Yeah, for sure.
Let us know what you think. 018-789-8899. Get us on Twitter or Instagram. We are at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break with the Guess Who and Baby Star. We'll be right back after that. Of course, Arv's going to have an update for Bursa at break here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.